This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and the author of more than 20 books, including The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say, an important new book that exposes the lies and anti-family agenda of the feminist movement. And now, here's the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
When I went to college, the principal interaction of men and women was called the date. A man would phone and invite a girl to be his guest for supper or to go to the movies. She would accept. They would have an enjoyable evening. He would pay the cost and then see that she got home safely. Maybe there would be a goodnight kiss at the door. The New York Times had a recent article stating that dating is now obsolete. Dating has been replaced by hanging out or hooking up. In this new world of internet posts and commitment-free sex, there are no clear rules. We can blame a lot of this change on the feminist movement. Feminism has frowned on old-fashioned courtship and taught young women there's something humiliating about a man buying a girl's dinner. Many young men today are afraid to ask a girl for a date. Some young women have begun to believe girls can get through life without men. Feminism has taught them that men are not really necessary after all. The disappearance of dating is a problem for young people of both genders who find it nearly impossible to find a spouse. But young women have biological clocks, and they can't wait forever if they want to have a family. Traditional dating worked to their advantage. The custom of restricting access to themselves gave women a tremendous amount of power. Men were forced to work to pursue women. Traditional dating also showed women which men were capable of supporting a family, and that's what she ought to know before she starts a serious relationship. What men want from women is sex and their own children, and women hold all the cards to set the term of a relationship. The best way for women to fix this situation is to insist on the traditional rules and even on old-fashioned courtship. Traditional dating and courtship were a very good pathway to marriage, and that's what we need more of today.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. The new book by Suzanne Venker and Phyllis Schlafly, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say, exposes the lies and anti-family agenda of the feminist movement. For more on the book or to join the blog conversation, go to eagleforum.org. That's eagleforum.org. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
John Stadtmiller here. Sometimes in life, you get lucky. Well, today is your lucky day. Our sponsor, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, have just announced their biggest savings yet on their one-month food supply by Linden Farms. This great one-month pack includes over 360 servings based on 2,000 calories per day. While supplies last, you'll get one free month of long-term emergency food entrees when you buy three. This is a massive savings of $600 on a four-month supply. Again, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is giving you buy 3 months, get an additional 1 month of food free. This is a great deal. Act fast. The site, again, is AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com or call them directly at 818-720-0759, 818-720-0759. Let them know John sent you. Do it today. AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Veteran-owned and operated.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver. All sizes. COQ10 with Hawthorne, Glucosamine Chondroitin, Sea Cucumber, Colloidal Minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, Colon Enhancer, our top-selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. Our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of The Truth Is, Truth Is a Lonely Warrior, and also The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline, which came out in 1988. He's written other books, but what we're talking about today is an article that he recently completed. It's entitled The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green, Who Really Fired the Shot Heard Round the World. And you were talking about the Boston Tea Party and some of the things that occurred, and it's just a different version of history than most of the listeners have probably heard. So please pick up from where you left off.
Sure, and people should feel free to challenge it. Well, let's talk about the Boston Tea Party. But what led to that situation was the British had repealed the Sugar Act, and they repealed the Stamp Act due to colonial protests. And so they brought Benjamin Franklin before Parliament. He was one of the American agents representing the colonies into Parliament. And they asked him, okay, how can we collect revenues? What would the colonies accept? And here's what Benjamin Franklin said to the Parliament. He said, the authority of Parliament is allowed to be valid in all laws except should lay internal taxes. It was never disputed in laying duties to regulate commerce. Again, he said, quote, I have never heard of an objection to the right of laying duties to regulate commerce. And I have more quotes in the article, but he goes on, says again and again, the colonies would accept your laying custom duties on goods. And that's why they came up with the Townsend Act, which placed customs duties on various British goods sold in America. Well, of course, there's fiery protest from Sam Adams to that, who said it's a tax in disguise. And he forced merchants to boycott British goods, and so the British backed down again, and they repealed the Townsend Act. They took off the duties on everything except tea. And I want to get clear, by 1773, the British were laying no taxes whatsoever on America. And the only customs duty was this one duty on tea. It was 3 pennies on a pound of tea. It was nominal. You can compare that to the 6.25% sales tax we have right now in Massachusetts. Now, the tea was so cheap, it was actually surplus tea of the British East India Company. It was offered to Americans at half the price. British had to pay for it. But this tea was so cheap, it was undercutting the Dutch tea that John Hancock was smuggling in. So understand, from John Hancock's viewpoint, the Boston Tea Party was good business. You know, to keep your profits high, destroy your competitors' merchandise. And I have a lot of friends in the Tea Party movement, and I really respect them. But the truth is that Benjamin Franklin called the Boston Tea Party an act of piracy, and it was, in fact, an act of vandalism, the destruction of private property. Now, from Hancock's perspective, this was profitable. From Sam Adams' perspective, it was going to push the country further towards inflammation of revolution and war. He knew that the British weren't going to take this line down, and they didn't. People were upset by this in Britain. They said, okay, we've taken enough from the town of Boston. And the British said, from now on, we're going to close the port of Boston until the damage is paid for. Now, lots of Bostonians wanted the tea to be reimbursed for, but Sam Adams blocked every move. Now, in the meantime, Boston was getting poor due to the port closure, and sympathy was sparked throughout the other colonies for Boston. And Sam Adams sent messages to other Connolly is saying you're next on the hit list. His Woody wrote to the Philadelphia Committee of Correspondents, quote, "This attack, though made immediately upon us, is doubtless designed for every other colony. Will not surrender the sacred rights and liberties into the hands of an infamous ministry. Now for is the time when all, capitalized, should be united in opposition to this violation of the liberties of all, capitalized." Well, this is what leads to the Continental Congress. As his biographer, John Miller, notes, quote, "No American patriot demanded more vigorously than Sam Adams a Continental Congress to unite opposition to Great Britain. That Congress met in 1774, and Sam Adams brought his Boston brand of politics to that. He made good friends with the guy who called himself the Sam Adams of Philadelphia, Charles Thompson. I'll give you a quote from Charles Thompson, who became secretary of the Continental Congress right through the Constitutional Convention of 1789. You might have heard this one, but it's not in my article. He'd written a history of the men and the events of the American Revolution, and he burned it. And when he was asked why he didn't publish, he said, quote, "No, I ought not, for I should contradict all the histories of the great events of the Revolution. Let the world admire the supposed wisdom and valor of our great men. I shall not undeceive future generations," unquote, Charles Thompson, Secretary of the Continental Congress. Now, Sam Adams used threats of violence against his main opponent at the Continental Congress, who was Joseph Galloway, moderate delegate from Pennsylvania, who wanted a plan of reconciliation and compromise with Britain. Galloway found a noose at his door, and the next night a message that said, "Hang yourself or we'll do it for you."
Whoa!
And here's what Galloway said, quote, "I lived in the utmost danger from the mobs raised by Mr. Adams of being hung at my own door. Every night I expected would be my last. Men were excited by persons northward," meaning Boston, "by falsehoods fabricated for the purpose to put me to death. Several attempts were made," unquote, Joseph Galloway, Pennsylvania delegate to the Continental Congress. That's something you didn't read when you went to high school. Well, the main thing, though, that Sam Adams accomplished at that Congress was he got a pledge from the other delegates that if shooting broke out between the British troops up in Massachusetts and the colonial militia, that the other colonies would come to the assistance of Massachusetts. But the other delegates were distrustful of Sam Adams, and they attached a very important stipulation to this pledge. They said, "We'll only come to the aid of Massachusetts if the British fire first." So when Sam Adams returns to Massachusetts, he has one principal goal in mind: to generate an incident where the British will fire first, and that's what's going to bring us up to Lexington Green.
Oh, my. Okay. All right.
Now, in the meantime, bear in mind
that
Joseph Warren, during the Continental Congress, has gotten together a group of radicals at Faneuil Hall and have passed something called the Suffolk Resolves, which call for, quote, "the inhabitants of towns and districts to use their utmost diligence to acquaint themselves with the art of war as soon as possible and appear under arms at least once every week." And Paul Revere wrote down to the Continental Congress with these resolves clenched in his hands. This is a radical step towards war. So Massachusetts is getting ready for war, and Sam Adams is waiting for this event to take place. But General Gage, who is Thomas Gage, is the British military commander in Boston, is in no hurry to have a confrontation with the militias. Now, Boston in 1774 to 75 is becoming a loyalist stronghold. Loyalists are being singled out. They're fleeing to Boston. And in the meantime, the Sons of Liberty are packing their bags. Basically, at this point, 1774 to 75, Boston is a loyalist stronghold. It's surrounded by a sea of patriotic rebels. But the Battle of Lexington takes place on April the 19th, 1775. Understand this, Deanna. Just 3 weeks later, the Second Continental Congress is due to start, May the 10th, 1775, with John Hancock as its president. And Sam Adams is desperate. It's only 3 weeks away. He knows if he doesn't get a shooting incident with the British involved, that the Second Continental Congress, people are going to, their passions for war and revolution are going to wane. He needs that incident quickly. So bait is given to General Gage. They've been meeting at the Provincial Congress in Concord, and General Gage starts to get intelligence reports which say there are large amounts of munitions, including cannons, which are going to be deployed against them in Boston in Concord. Now, these reports generally exaggerate the munitions that are there, but it's enough to lure his troops out for that fateful day when they meet the Lexington militia, April the 19th, 1775. Now, I have to say here, What kind of a coincidence can it be that Paul Revere, John Hancock, and Sam Adams, the mastermind and the chief propagandist of the Boston Massacre, are now congregating in a house a few hundred feet behind Lexington Green the night before that battle takes place?
Indeed.
Historians say, well, Revere rode to Lexington to warn Hancock and Adams that the British troops were marching there, maybe to arrest them. Well, you know, General Gates did have authority to arrest rebel leaders, but he wasn't about to try that. He knew what a reaction it would produce. And let me tell you something, there's no way they were on their way to arrest Hancock and Adams in Lexington. For one thing, you don't send 700 infantry up for a mission like that.
Right.
Also, we have a copy of General Gage's orders to the commander of the expedition. They mentioned securing the munitions in Concord. They say nothing whatsoever about arresting Hancock and Adams.
Okay. Jim, we do have to take a real quick break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, available in Kindle and hard copy at Amazon. Okay, please pick up from where you left off, and we won't take calls for a while yet. Let's hold off on the calls for a while. Okay, you were talking about Gage and the fact that there was no mention of any arrests, so pick it up from
right
there.
And when the British came to Lexington, they never made any motion in the direction of what is called the Hancock Clark House, so we know that they were not on a mission to arrest those two. And we should understand this, that in the wee hours of the morning, Sam Adams and John Hancock walked down to Buckman's Tavern, where the Lexington militia had gathered, response to the alarm bells. You know, Paul Revere had gone out to alarm the countryside, right? And they had a conversation with the Lexington militia, and the details of that conversation have never been revealed, but we know this. We know that Adams definitely needed a British-fired incident for the upcoming Continental Congress. And one of the most famous quotes of Sam Adams' career, you can find it online very easily, was, quote, "Put your enemy in the wrong and keep him so, as a wise maxim in politics as well as in war," unquote, Sam Adams. And also, he is considered the chief architect of the Boston Massacre. And I want to talk about some parallels between the Boston Massacre and what was originally called the Lexington Massacre, not the Battle of Lexington. In my online article, you see prints that were made of each event. You see Paul Revere's print of the Boston Massacre and Doolittle's engraving of the Lexington Massacre, and they're very similar. In each picture, you see the Redcoats firing an orderly volley with a British officer with his sword raised, and everybody's running. It's an unprovoked, wanton slaughter. And this is in spite of British reports that their officers never gave orders to shoot in either incident. It was sporadic and spontaneous. Now, you might recall I was quoting a deponent of the Boston Massacre named John Wilson earlier, and he said some small boys made a noise to the soldiers. This is the Boston Massacre, and the officer said, "Why don't you fire? Damn you, fire." They thereupon fired. Now, you go up to the depositions for the Lexington Massacre, and William Draper, deponent of Lexington, says, "The commanding officer said to the troops, fire, damn you, fire," and thereupon they fired. And I'm looking at this, Dan, and I'm saying, you know, two separate incidents, two different officers. Was it standard practice for British officers to command their men with the exact words, fire, damn you, fire?
Yeah.
Somebody
that...
is scripting these depositions, and remember that Joseph Warren is in charge of collecting the Lexington depositions. He is the Grand Master of St. Andrew's Masonic Lodge that meets at the Green Dragon Tavern. He's also on the committee that collected the Boston Massacre depositions. Well, these depositions are one common denominator. The prints are a common denominator. Both incidents were followed by quick writing dispatch writers with the news of the events. The history of the town of Lexington says the report of the bloody transaction at Lexington spread as on the wings of the wind to the distance of 40 or 50 miles within the course of the forenoon. The people immediately flew to arms, and of course all down the east coast of the American continent, dispatch writers were bringing the story of a Lexington massacre. You might remember Hancock's language and his oration about the Boston Massacre, and how Sam Adams liked to say that the British soldiers were raping ladies and harming small boys. I want to read to you now from that, a little bit more from that Massachusetts spy. This is the official account that was given the other colonies of the Lexington battle. Quote, "Americans, forever bear in mind the Battle of Lexington, where British troops unmolested and unprovoked, wantonly, and in a most inhuman manner, fired upon and killed a number of our countrymen, robbed them of their provisions, plundered and burnt their homes. Nor could the tears of defenseless women, some of whom were in the pains of childbirth, the cries of helpless babes, nor the prayers of old age confined to beds of sickness, appease their thirst for blood or divert them from their design of murder and robbery." Well, he's talking about defenseless women and the pains of childbirth. Deanna, no historian has ever found a case where a woman in childbirth was molested by the British that day. The closest case was a woman named Hannah Adams. They did burn some houses because they were fired at from those houses. Hannah Adams had to evacuate her house. She did have an 18-day-old baby who grew up herself, was married. They were not harmed. As for those in old age and beds of sickness, no historian has ever found a person of old age who was molested by the British that day. The closest case is a guy named Samuel Whittemore. He's 79. He was an old, feisty war veteran. He fired at the British and killed two of them and mortally wounded another with his musket and his pistols. And the British bayoneted him and shot him. But he was obviously not confined to a bed of sickness, as the Massachusetts spy put it. And as a matter of fact, he survived the bayoneting. He lived to die at the age of 97 of natural causes. But these two incidences, the Hannah Adams and Whittemore, were inflated into countless assaults on the elderly and the defenseless, the cries of the babes. And this brings to mind, Dan, as you know, Americans have constantly, throughout the years, been provoked to go to war by fake atrocity stories. You know, the Spanish-American War, the Spanish in Cuba were roasting priests and throwing the Cubans to sharks. In World War I, was German soldiers were supposedly bayoneting babies. The Gulf War of 91, they said Iraqis were throwing Kuwaiti babies out of incubators. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's going to get people's flames going like a baby atrocity story. You see this pattern taking place. Now, people down the rest of the coast had no way of knowing these stories were untrue.
Right.
But let's talk about what really did happen in Lexington on April the 19th, 1775. We know that Hancock and Adams have had a discussion with the militia. I want to point out, there's some oddities here. The militia at Lexington acts very differently from all the other militias. The Massachusetts militias were famous on that day for firing behind trees, right, and from behind walls at the British. They didn't stand in parade formation, right? But not the Lexington militia. They came out, they stood on Lexington Green in parade formation with their guns at their breast. This was an open invitation to the British to confront them. Now, the British could not walk by this hostile armed force, leaving them on their flank and threatening their rear. There's something else that a lot of people don't know. Although Adams and Hancock departed Lexington shortly before the battle, they went to the neighboring town of Woburn to a spot about 1 mile from where I'm talking to you now. Paul Revere went with them, but Paul Revere went back to Lexington Green, and he was actually at the Green when the British marched in. And the reason he gives, historically, he says he had to go back because John Hancock had forgotten his important trunk, which he left at Buckman's Tavern. Now, by sheer coincidence, Buckman's Tavern is also where the militia are gathered. Now, this story might be true. He said he went there with a fellow named John Lowell, who's Hancock's clerk, another Freemason from St. Andrew's Masonic Lodge. It might be true that he went there to get the trunk. But there's some doubtful things about this story. For one thing, Hancock had already been to Buckman's Tavern to talk to the militia, so why didn't he get the trunk then? Also, the trunk supposedly was wanted by Hancock because he was afraid the British would discover it, and it had important documents in it. But, you know, the British were not going to turn off their path to Concord to investigate a tavern and find a trunk in it. And, of course, they didn't. It was an unrealistic fear. And also, how come he didn't send his coach back to get it? You know, Revere could have grabbed it up. It's been out of there in a couple of minutes, but instead, Revere and Lowell walk up to the tavern on foot at 4:30 in the morning, and they hang there for a half hour. They don't take the trunk. They don't take the trunk. And so Hancock and Lowell are at Buckman's Tavern at 5 o'clock in the morning when the British troops march in, and at that moment, Revere says he and Lowell went to get the trunk while the militia marched out of the tavern to stand on Lexington Green.
Wow. Amazing stuff. Just amazing stuff. I suppose that people, when reading this, have really asked some questions and have made some accusations about you.
Well, absolutely. I would expect that.
Yes.
I'm presenting a version of history that we are not commonly taught, but I would just invite people to look at the online article, The Secret Spirit at Lexington Green, and I do have documentation there. You can find this in any of the books that I've used as sources for this. But let's talk a little bit about what actually happened next. You've got Paul Revere and Lowell saying they left with a trunk while the militia stands in parade formation on Lexington Green.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back from the break.
After
the
break, yeah.
And 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, DO, and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity, Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll-free, 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to CampingSurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. CampingSurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at CampingSurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. CampingSurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at CampingSurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
That moment of panic. Sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone. Frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit WhatLiesInYourDebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. WhatLiesInYourDebt.com has solutions. WhatLiesInYourDebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few thousand bucks during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at WhatLiesInYourDebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit WhatLiesInYourDebt.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, available as a Kindle version or as a regular hard book at Amazon. And today he is talking about his recent article, The Secrets Buried at Lexington Green, Who Really Fired the Shot Heard Round the World. Alrighty, go ahead and pick up from where you left off.
We left again, off at 5 a.m.
At
Lexington Green on April the 19th, 1775. The militia is going out in parade formation, contrary to common sense, though they're grossly outnumbered, while Paul Revere and John Lowell take Hancock's trunk. This makes no sense. By hauling the trunk with the British in view, there's much greater chance of their attracting attention to the trunk than if they simply left it on the second floor of Buckman's Tavern. But I'm now going to reconstruct the events of Lexington based on the British accounts, which you'll recall early on, we listed reasons why the British accounts are more credible. Lieutenant William Sutherland and Lieutenant Jesse Adair are riding ahead of the British column. As they approached Lexington Green, they saw a colonist aim his musket at them and pull the trigger, but it flashed in the pan, meaning that the primer charge flamed, but the gun didn't go off, and they thought they'd been spared by a misfire. Well, they rode back and spoke to the commander of the lead column, Major John Pitcairn. He'd already heard there was a hostile force waiting in Lexington along the road, to order his men to fix bayonets and load, but out orders. Now, the British proceed to the green, and they spot the militia standing in battle formation on the green. They then split left and right to flank. And this is when the first shots are fired. They're fired from the right. And I'm going to quote Lieutenant Sutherland on this. He said, quote, "We still went on further when three shot more were fired at us, which we did not return. This is sacred truth, as I hope for mercy. These three shots were fired from the corner of a large house to the right of the church." Now, I've got a map of Lexington Village and my article. The building he refers to is Buckman's Tavern, where Paul Revere and John Lowell had been just moments before. The three shots all missed. The British ignored those three shots and continued approaching the militia on the green. Major Pitcairn rode up on his horse. He told the men to disperse and drop their arms. At this moment, both sides concur. The militia did begin to disperse, but suddenly, four or five men amongst them ran, jumped behind a wall, and fired a volley. Quoting Major Pitcairn, quote, "Some of the rebels who had jumped over the wall fired four or five shots at the soldiers." Quoting Lieutenant Sutherland, "Instantly, some of the villains who got over a wall fired at us, which our men for the first time returned. Ensign Jeremy Lister, he's writing several years later, he reverses the sequence. He says, "They gave us a fire, then run off to get behind a wall." Now, in addition to this, Pitcairn said his horse was hit by a shot fired from some other quarter. And he also says, quote, "At the same time, several shots were fired from a meeting house on our left." That is the church, also called the meeting house. So based on this, we have three shots from the corner of Buckman's Tavern. That means three shooters, because you got no repeaters, no repeating rifles back then, no automatics, okay? You've got four or five shots from behind the wall, and you've got several shots from the meeting house. So it appears that at least 10 shots are fired on the British before they return fire, and is not given on orders. It is a spontaneous, sporadic fire, and suddenly the whole green just billows with smoke. Now, did the Lexington militia intend to offer themselves as cannon fodder before this British force? Remember, there were eight who died, nine were wounded. The British suffered only one wound. They certainly weren't there to be cannon fodder. There's evidence that these shots from concealed locations were fired by men who were not members of the Lexington militia. And as evidence of that, there's a statement in General Gage's papers from an American loyalist named George Leonard. Later in the day, General Gage sent a relief column to help his troops, and George Leonard was writing ahead of it as a scout, and here's what he wrote in his deposition, quote, "Being on horseback and having no connection with the army, he several times went forward of the brigade and met with a countryman," meaning an American, "who was wounded, supported by two others who were armed. This was about a mile this side," meaning east of the Lexington meeting house. The deponent asked the wounded person what was the matter. He answered that the regulars had shot him. The opponent then asked what provoked them to do it. He said that some of our people fired on the regulars, and they fell on us like bulldogs and killed eight and wounded 19. He further said that it was not the company he belonged to that fired, but some of our country people on the other side of the road. The deponent inquired of the other men if they were present. They answered yes and related the affair as the wounded man had done. All three blamed the rashness of their own people for firing first, and they supposed now the regulars would kill everybody they met with. That is George Leonard's deposition of May the 4th, 1775. Now, right. One thing I want to emphasize here, Deanna, is that this wounded Lexington militiaman said that it was not his company that fired, but other people on the other side of the road. By company, he means the Lexington militia. All the wounded were from the Lexington militia that day. By the other side of the road, he means the Buckman Tavern area. Now, this wording is very important when you look at the depositions of the Lexington militia. 34 militiamen signed a deposition saying, quote, "Not a gun was fired by any person in our company on the regulars, to our knowledge, before they fired on us." Another 14 signed a statement that said, quote, "The regulars fired on the company before a gun was fired by any of our company on them." This is a very important distinction here. It's a nuance. They're not denying that Americans fired first. They're simply saying it was not our men. Now, that raises the question of who were the gunmen who fired from concealed locations that day, from behind the wall, the meeting house, in the corner of Buckman's Tavern. It would appear that both the British and the militiamen are in a trap that day.
Let's call attention to your map.
Captain Parker, I'm sorry.
You have a map within your article, and it's it shows exactly where everything is. I think it's really important that people look at this map because it shows where all the stable is, where the Buckman Tavern is, where people are going, where the British are. I think it's important. So anyway, look at that map.
Show the route of Paul Revere. He walked right through the militia with that trunk. And so the question is, was he just carrying the trunk, or was he actually orchestrating things? Remember how he distorted what had happened at the Boston Massacre in his print.
Right.
This was to be the Lexington Massacre, of course. Now, we don't know the identities of those men who fired. They weren't part of the Lexington militia. But remember that Paul Revere had come there with another member of St. Andrew's Masonic Lodge, John Lowell. The question would be raised, did he bring other men? Because when he came there at 4:30, it was still dark, and gunmen would have been easy to place in position without being noticed by either the militia, or, of course, the British had not yet arrived. There's another thing I suggest in this article, Deanna, which is I have a feeling that these shots were not intended to meet their targets. The three shots from the corner of Buckman's all missed. The men who fired from behind the wall all missed. And the men who fired from the meeting house all missed their shots. So the militias were known for their marksmanship. And later that day, the British suffered 250 casualties, but at Lexington, they had just one minor wound in the leg from a spent ball. That was it. Remember, 79-year-old Samuel Whittemore was able to kill three redcoats firing behind a wall all by himself. How is it that all these marksmen firing from concealed locations missed every time? I think the answer is Sam Adams wanted a replay of the Boston Massacre. You push the British into a situation where they're going to shoot, but you don't inflict British casualties. If British redcoats had to be buried in any great number at Lexington Green, it would have destroyed the story of the Lexington Massacre, which needed to be spread throughout the colonies. Now, further away, when all this happened, John Hancock was sitting next to Sam Adams, and when they heard the distant musketry from Lexington coming, Sam Adams turned to John Hancock and said, "What a glorious morning is this." Now, later on, historians changed it to say, "What a glorious morning this is for America," but that's not what he actually said. Here's what historian William Hallahan says, quote, "For the price of a few dead farmers, Adams could buy his war."
Wow. Oh, goodness. Okay.
Now, this is very much what I believe is a false flag situation, very similar to other events that were used to orchestrate inflame passions and arouse people to war. And at the end of this article, Deanna, I try to lend some balance. I try to give a little balance to Sam Adams, and I also try to make it very clear I'm not in any way against the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. We're fighting for our rights these days. Every one of them, from the right to trial by jury to freedom of speech and freedom of religion, is under assault these days. But I think it's very important that we do not regard people who started the American Revolution as being such saints that we can't scrutinize what they were doing at that time. And that's what I've tried to do in this article.
Right. And you can I always make comparisons. And when you were talking, I was comparing these Freemasons, because that's what they were, these Freemasons who were firing. And when you look at the beginning of the so-called Civil War, you had the same kind of scenario where people fired, people weren't hurt, but it sure got the war started, and there were certainly a lot of celebrations over that. Alrighty, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system and fire piston, or you just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today, toll-free at 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Visit CampingSurvival.com now and receive 5% off any purchase with the code FREEDOM. CampingSurvival.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
My name is Don Wiskin. I had a massive heart attack at 42. The doctors could do nothing but send me home with disability as my future. I reversed the damage done to my heart with a natural remedy. I am now 58 and contribute my good health today to ExtendoVite. You have heard my messages for many years. A lot of people have taken ExtendoVite and improved their health issues. We are surrounded by fast food, toxic air, and chemicals that our body cannot eliminate. As we age, they can age us faster. Clean yourself out with ExtendoVite, available in capsule or liquid form. Get a 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. You can live a longer, healthier life just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today has been James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, available at Amazon in Kindle and as a hardcover. Or is it paper? It's paperback, right?
Paperback, yes.
Yeah, okay. All righty. So you're going, so now that we've kind of gone through this article, you did this to be objective and to give a different side of the story. You brought out things that other people have not, focused on at all. And I always believe in hearing both sides of every story. And that's what you're doing. And then we can draw our own conclusions.
That's right. I'm presenting a view of this that is certainly not the one that we've been taught, and people are absolutely free to disagree. And, you know, it's kind of like in a trial, you know, it's pretty difficult for either side to absolutely prove they're right, but I've just tried to present evidence that suggests this conclusion. My conclusion that it was members perhaps of a secret society firing would be a conjecture on my part. Also, it is conjecture that they deliberately missed. But you have to ask a lot of questions, you know, if people really believe the original story and the British wantonly fired, why did the militia come out and stand in battle formation contrary to common sense and contrary to what all the other militias did? And why is it that my town, the town of Lexington, kept its firing of any shots of any kind basically a secret for 50 years? It was a town secret until, jealousies arose over who fired the shot right around the world at the celebration. So these are questions that need to be looked at, and I believe that this explanation is probably the accurate one, but certainly other people are welcome to look at those facts and draw different conclusions from them.
Well, Jim, I kind of think that you are in a good position to be able to address this issue because you grew up in the area. It is part of your heritage, part of your family. And who better to explain this?
Right. It doesn't give me any authority, but it did give me some special interest in this because I grew up around these things. And I want to say something here that, one thing that kind of got me first interested in this was that, I'm a Christian, and, in the Bible, Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's when he's asked if we should pay taxes. And he didn't say, you don't have to pay because you don't have representation in the Roman Senate, And also the Bible generally prescribes obedience to authority, except in the case where you're truly choosing between the authority and God. And so I always felt that it seems like we give the founding fathers, the American Revolution, as a free pass on this, on the issue of taxes. And in my article, I do address the whole issue of taxation and representation. We did have representation in the form of agents who spoke to Parliament, like Benjamin Franklin. And actually, voting representatives in Parliament was kind of impractical because, it's a two-month voyage back and forth. Just one way to get to Britain and back. So if you're trying to consult about a tax proposal with your local colonial legislature, it's a pretty impractical way to conduct business in Parliament, besides the fact that Britain being more populous back then, they would have outvoted us on tax measures anyway. But I do try to address these issues because it was centrally the issue was taxation. But I do mention this in the article. I've written on things like the Holodomor, where Joseph Stalin put millions of Ukrainians to death. And to me, that is tyranny and that is slavery. But to call a 3-cent tax on a pound of tea tyranny or slavery, or as Sam Adams liked to put it, abject slavery, I believe that's very pale in comparison. But it was also,
absolutely.
It was not only that, but it was the role of secret societies in that and the French Revolution that also intrigued me, that there's more to going on than what we've been told in standard history textbooks.
And, of course, many of us have seen Benjamin Franklin, George Washington in his Freemason regalia with his apron and all that. And yet when we're talking to patriots who just almost worship the founding fathers, the so-called founding fathers, you never hear anything negative. They just want to, it's just kind of hero worship and very inaccurate. You need to look at these people as people. And certainly, with all of the violence that you talked about at the beginning of the article, Tammany Hall kind of stuff where they had mobs. When I think about, the colonial times, I think about everybody just, hanging out with at the table at night with a candle, reading and just being, just leading their lives and farming, and you don't think of them as being terrorized by their own people, by their own neighbors, who were actually seeking to control them, political control, and using violence to do it.
Right. Well, the Sons of Liberty that appear in my article and in the books of historians like John Miller and William Hallahan are not the same Sons of Liberty you saw in Walt Disney's Johnny Tremaine.
Probably not. Yes, probably not. And they were a secret society, and they were also members of the Philosophical Society, and I think that could stand some addressing at some point because, what was the Philosophical Societies? What were they promoting? What were they doing? And they were doing it in secret, and it was a group for the elite, and even the Constitution was written by the elite for the elite behind closed doors. And certainly there are things in the Constitution that are that sound very good, but there are things that you really have to question. I'm not saying that we should throw it out or anything, but anyway, there are some questions. We do have a caller.
I think we owe a debt of gratitude to the Bill of Rights. You know, I'm grateful for freedom of speech and that you and I can speak as freely as we do, but a lot of people forget that those rights did not really originate with the American Revolution. You know, freedom of speech, you know, before the Revolutionary War, there were no redcoats sitting in people's homes telling them what they could say. People had freedom of speech before that war. And then freedom of religion, you know, no redcoats were forcing people at the point of a bayonet to go to a certain church. I mean, they had freedom of speech. They had the right to the pursuit of happiness. And a lot of those things that we think were engendered by the Revolution, actually, Englishmen had already demanded those rights. They had the 1689 Bill of Rights, and they have the rights that actually dated back to the Magna Carta in the 13th century.
Exactly.
But it didn't really begin then. But at the same time, of course, we cherish those rights, and we realize how much those rights are today under threat, more today than ever before.
But the fact that they are with the ten amendments, the Bill of Rights, people get to thinking, oh, well, the Constitution, therefore the government has granted us this. No, the Constitution does not grant us those. God grants us those rights.
Yes.
And what the Constitution or the government appears to be granting us, they can also retrieve, correct?
That's right. You never want to consider the government the fountain of your rights because, as you say, once you do that, they also have the right to take away those things. And when Obamacare, you know, if you say that the government has the right and the authority to control our medical care, they also have the right to take it away. The more power you give the government, the more you can lose your well-being to that government.
Sure. Let's go ahead and take this last caller. Let's take Mike in South Carolina. Mike, welcome. Quickly, because we're running out of time.
Deanna, thanks for all you do. James, I'm going to pass on three things very quickly, and then I have one real quick question. The three things, Deanna, you can verify that Dr. Wynn Parker, within the last 2 months, has said that America has been put under the United Nations jurisdiction. One of the executive orders that the president or the dictator has made is it suspends the Bill of Rights. And currently, he is rewriting the Constitution.
Okay. Jim, what do you say about that?
I know that our Constitution is being eroded, has been eroded by the Supreme Court and by executive orders step by step over decades now. And that's just what we're talking about. We are losing our freedoms. I wouldn't say that the Bill of Rights is no longer there, but it's certainly being withered away.
Exactly.
Vows that every person he meets, like Saudi Arabia, England, Indonesia, and China. Do you know why he vows?
Well, who knows?
I know. I just like to let you. I just want to know if James knows.
Okay.
I didn't actually get the question.
Do you know why the current president or the dictator vows to the Saudi king, to England, to Indonesia and to China.
Oops, I'm sorry. We are going to have to address that at a future show, but we have run out of time. Thank you so much, James, for being on the program, and thank you, listeners. We'll talk with you tomorrow.